If you should feel uncomfortable during this episode, I challenge you to not only ask yourself why, but to keep asking and follow that rabbit hole as deep as you can. Climate change is an issue that has become frighteningly more relevant in recent years, and because of special interests, the field has become muddied with climate change deniers who use dishonest tactics to get their message across. The website skepticalscience.com is one line of defense against these messengers, and it was created and maintained by a research assistant professor at the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University. He both authored and co-authored two books about climate science with an emphasis on climate change. He also lead authored a 2013 award-winning paper on the scientific consensus on climate change. And in 2015, he developed an open online course on climate change denial with the Global Change Institute at the University of Queensland. This person is John Cook. Episode 45 of Breaking Math, Climate Denialism and Cranky Uncles. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And you're listening to Breaking Math. And with us, we have on John Cook. John Cook, welcome.
G'day. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you. I'm really, really excited. If you guys don't mind, I want to share a quick story about how I was introduced to John Cook. I follow a lot of scientists on Facebook and on Twitter. One of the scientists I follow on Facebook is Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, one of the lead authors of the 2018 U.S. Climate Assessment. And she put a post on Facebook this last week about a new app that is being developed, and it's sort of a climate change education app, which Dr. John Cook is creating. Can you tell us a little bit about this app?
Yeah, sure. So for the last decade now, I've been researching how to counter misinformation about climate change. And over the course of a PhD, the answer that came out of 5 years of PhD research was inoculation is the answer. We build resilience against misinformation by helping people understand the different techniques used to mislead. So ever since I finished my PhD, I've been researching, well, how do you put that into practice? And over a number of years, I've come to the conclusion that gamification is a really powerful and accessible way of explaining the techniques of misinformation to people. And so that's what we're trying to put into practice now.
And of course, you've already put this somewhat into practice with your website. Do you want to talk real quick about what your website is about and what the experience of using your website is like?
So I started my website, Skeptical Science, in 2007. And at that time, I knew nothing about social science or science communication. My background was physics. So I was coming at it as someone with a physical science background. So I very naively thought that explaining the facts should be sufficient to counter science misinformation and denial. And it turns out the human brain is a lot more complicated than I realized. So Skeptical Science, I probably should explain what that is a website that debunks misinformation about climate change. And the approach I take with that website is pretty simple. I just look at all the most common myths about climate change and I debunk them with peer-reviewed scientific research. The problem is that just supplying the facts isn't sufficient. It's not enough to properly counter misinformation.
In that vein, how are people being dishonest about climate change? In what tactics are they using that you're needing to counter these with these facts?
So there are a whole family of different techniques that are used to distort the facts about climate change. And in fact, distort any type of science information. But I found that a really easy way to remember them is the acronym FLICC, F-L-I-C-C, which stands for fake experts, logical fallacies, impossible expectations, cherry picking, and conspiracy theories. Every movement that denies a scientific consensus uses these five techniques.
And people have been talking a lot about scientific consensus. I've noticed. What is a scientific consensus? Because I know some people are confused about that.
So what is the scientific consensus with regards to climate change?
Yeah, because I'm familiar with is the concept that it's a bunch of papers that support one another.
Yeah, and actually what I want to add on this real quick is I think a lot of the confusion, at least among my own peers, is a general consensus is different than a scientific consensus. You know, there's some nuances there, and there's reasons why a scientific consensus should be absolutely considered more than, you know, a popular consensus.
Yeah. So there's been a number of studies that have looked at this question and tried to quantify what is the scientific consensus on climate change, or to be more precise, what is the scientific consensus on whether humans are causing global warming or not? And the very first study that did this was Naomi Oreskes in 2004. She looked at 900 odd papers about climate change and couldn't find a single paper that disagreed with human caused global warming. But possibly the more well-known study came in 2009. And that was by Peter Doran, who's a glaciologist. He's a climate scientist. He surveyed the Earth science community, and he found that amongst the scientists who were doing climate research, 97% agreed that humans were causing global warming. And in 2013, I published a paper with some of my colleagues at Skeptical Science, where we looked at about 12,000 climate papers. And amongst the papers that state a position on human-caused global warming, again, we found 97% consensus. So when people talk about consensus, it can mean different things. It can mean a consensus amongst climate scientists who are doing climate research. It can also mean a consensus amongst peer-reviewed papers about climate change. But whichever way you look at it, the answer is always very similar. There's overwhelming scientific agreement amongst the relevant experts in climate science, that humans are causing global warming.
And so this app, we had a few questions about the app. So how is the app being funded?
So what we're doing at the moment is running a crowdfunding campaign. I've actually designed the game already. I've created a prototype of it. Which we've been testing in classrooms, in colleges. Just on Friday, in fact, we tested it in a high school class in Seattle for the first time. And excitingly, we found that even amongst high school students, the same as what we found with college students, this simple prototype improves the students' critical thinking skills. It improves their ability to detect misinformation. But it's just a simple prototype. It's not a properly running game, and so now we're running a crowdfunding campaign to raise the money to actually develop a native iPhone app. And if we're successful at raising the funds to design an iPhone app, our next goal is to raise the funds to also create an Android version.
Very cool. I think both Sophia and I are currently Android users. We are formerly iPhone users. When will it be available for the iPhone? When will the app be done?
Our goal is to release the iPhone version in June next year. And I think the Android would come, I forget the exact day. I think we said maybe it was roughly 3 months afterwards. I'm hoping that we can be working on both at the same time. So yeah, middle of the next year. I mean, I would love to get out even sooner and start testing it in classrooms again. But yeah, in 2020.
So the app, you said it helps people think critically. It makes them more able to see things for what they are by inoculating them with this sort of information. Is this app intended at all for people who are skeptics themselves? And if so, do you have a plan for leading them to using the app or convincing them to use it in a sentence, not preaching to the choir?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And there's, I guess I have a couple of answers. Well, to be precise, three answers, because there's really three different parts of the public that are relevant to that question. Roughly 10% of the US public are dismissive about climate science, so they're kind of the cranky uncles. 58% of the US are either concerned or alarmed about climate change, so they're on board with the science. And then the leftovers, which is, well, let me do the math, is that 32%? Of the rest of the public are more in that kind of undecided or even disengaged kind of group. Now, there's a lot of research telling us that it's extremely difficult to change the minds of those cranky uncles, those dismissives, because presenting evidence to them, presenting arguments, presenting data, is largely ineffective or even can be counterproductive. So cranky uncles aren't really the target audience of this kind of game. Rather, there's two types of audiences. One is the 58% who are concerned or alarmed. And it's in this case, the game is not about preaching to the choir. It's more about teaching the choir to sing. Our survey data that we've collected at George Mason finds that amongst those 58% who are concerned about climate change, most of them don't talk about climate change to their friends and family. And research published by Janet Swim, I think she's at Penn State, finds that the main reason why they don't talk about climate change, even though they're concerned, even though they're on board with the science, is because they're worried about pushback. They think that the cranky uncles are going to come back at them and they're going to be made to look stupid if they don't have the right answers. So understanding the arguments that you might encounter from the cranky uncle is empowering. It gives people confidence to talk about difficult issues. And that's what a lot of research into this area in terms of arming people with arguments, inoculating them with the possible type of cranky uncle arguments they might encounter, that does empower people and give them confidence to talk about it. So that's one of the goals of the game. The second is trying to engage those people who are disengaged. Our hope is that using cartoons and humor and gameplay and even social elements in games entice and engage those people who aren't currently engaged with the issue of climate change.
Very cool. Now, I think what you just said actually directly relates to my next question when you talked about humor and the game factor.
This episode is all about climate change and how it's related to critical reasoning. To that end, our partner Brilliant.org has a course about scientific thinking, which is about how to explain the world in scientific terms. I love how the course starts by explaining the nature of simple mechanical systems and takes you all the way through more advanced topics like heat and light. To support your education in math and physics, go to www.brilliant.org/breakingmath and sign up for free. The first 200 Breaking Math listeners can save 20% off the annual subscription, which we have been using.
My next question is, what are the differences in your goals between the app and the website that you currently run?
That's a good question. I think that they have similar goals in that they're about increasing the public's climate literacy and reducing misconceptions about climate change, but they take completely different approaches. And they probably try to achieve those goals through different routes. Skeptical science is about providing scientific information and being a resource. Essentially, when I created it, my goal was to create an encyclopedic resource so that if someone wants to know the answer to a particular question, is global warming happening? What role does the sun have in causing climate change? If they Google it, skeptical science would come up in the top results and they could go there and get access to the peer-reviewed science.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about creating a resource for people who want information. The cranky uncle game is more, firstly, there's a much greater emphasis on critical thinking. It's more about explaining fallacies, denial techniques, and the ways that facts can be distorted. We do have to communicate some climate information, but it's mostly about the critical thinking. So that's probably the biggest difference. But also it uses humor and cartoons as a way of engaging people and just making it more entertaining as well.
Yeah, I noticed even the title of the game, which we've been saying a lot of times, but we haven't actually explicitly said that it's the title of the game, Cranky Uncle. Do you want to talk about how you came to the, why is it called Cranky Uncle?
I can't actually remember the moment when I came up with that. But one thing I've observed is that, and in so many conversations that I've had with people about climate change, is it seems to be almost this universal human condition that we all have an uncle or a father or a father-in-law. I have all three of those who have very strongly held views about issues like climate change and don't accept the scientific consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of research that backs that up too. There's research showing that the demographic that is most likely to deny climate science are people who are older, male, white, and politically conservative. And so that's essentially the cranky uncle stereotype. And so I think that there's a bit of research behind it. There's a bit of personal experience and anecdotal experience from talking to people behind it. And just on a purely comedy level, the term cranky uncle has lots of hard consonants in it, which makes it more fun to say.
That's cool. Very cool.
What is a myth about climate science that is repeated often or perhaps even repeated during someone trying to support climate science? Is there anything that has infected the discourse like that?
Could you clarify what you mean by repeated in trying to support climate science?
I think I think my question was slightly do you know if any of those myths are, if you know of any myths that are used by people who are aware of humans' effect on climate change accidentally in their support?
Oh, I see what you mean. So are there, like, most of the myths that we debunk are from climate deniers, but are there any myths that are believed by people who accept the scientific consensus? Is that your question?
Yes. Yeah, that was much more succinct.
Yeah. So we do debunk some of those myths, but not as many, because we find that climate denial is much more destructive than and much more wrong than people who exaggerate the problem. But there are some who do exaggerate the problem, although the problem is pretty bad anyway, without exaggeration. One example of a myth that we debunk is the claim that more than half of CO2 emissions comes from the animal agriculture industry. So there's a documentary called Cowspiracy, and it's a documentary that basically argues that we should be eating less meat, or I guess they would argue we should be eating no meat. And eating less meat is a good thing in terms of environment and health. But unfortunately, one of the main talking points coming out of that documentary is that 51% of CO2 emissions come from animal agriculture, out of the meat industry. And it turns out that's just a completely false number. The actual number, according to the United Nations and other consensus reports, is about 14 to 18%. And it's just a shame that this false number is being promoted so much, because 14 to 18% is not a small number. If we reduced meat eating, that would have a significant impact on reducing climate change. And so their basic conclusion from Cowspiracy is correct. We need to eat less meat. But unfortunately, they use a false number to promote that argument, and it kind of diminishes their impact as a consequence.
I could see the potential for, because I know that there are, and I'm not in favor or opposition to vegetarianism, for instance, but I do know that there's a lot of false information when it comes to eating food. So I noticed that this myth is related to another, I guess I don't know what to call them, source of, I don't know, chaos. You talk about that a little bit too. I think you authored a paper or something about it. There's a relationship between conspiracy theories and
climate deniers.
Okay, so when I did my PhD, my supervisor was Stefan Lewandowski, and he published a paper, a survey basically, where he surveyed people, asking them questions about climate change, asking them questions about different conspiracy theories, non-climate conspiracy theories. And what he found was the people who were more likely to deny climate change were also more likely to believe conspiracy theories. So the conclusion, and I think it's a kind of obvious conclusion, is that denying the consensus on climate change is associated with conspiratorial thinking. Climate deniers are more likely to be conspiracy theorists. The response to his paper was from climate deniers was they started to come up with all these conspiracy theories to explain his scientific result. They're saying that he faked the data, he colluded with the people who filled out the survey, Then the conspiracy theory started to get bigger and bigger. They brought me into it, and I was involved somehow. The Australian government was involved, and it was the trajectory of this spiraling, ever increasing conspiracy theory was kind of surreal, and we couldn't believe it was happening. And so we wrote a paper about it. We called it "Recursive Fury: Conspiracy Theories in Response to Research About Conspiracy Theory," which ironically was an anecdotal proof of the original finding.
Wow, real quick. Hey, so I do have a few questions that I'd like to get to real quick. One of the questions that I have, well, this is a multi-tier part. I wanted to ask you how our listeners can get involved in supporting the app, but I also specifically wanted to have you talk about the cartoon option for listeners who support at a certain tier. I think that is one of the coolest things that you did, and it made me very excited to support it.
Yeah, so... the whole point of the crowdfunding campaign is obviously we are trying to raise funds to develop a game that improves critical thinking. We think will have a big impact on helping society, helping democracy even. I think if people are more resilient against misinformation, democracy is stronger because of that. So I think there are a lot of good reasons to support this game. And if people do want to support it, they can go to the address sks.to/cranky.
sks.to/cranky?
Yeah. It's a very short URL that redirects to the crowdfunding page. I think that a lot of the people who are probably almost everyone who donates to it is motivated by wanting to help make a stronger society. But with crowdfunding, it doesn't hurt if you provide extra incentives. And we decided to include an incentive that's unique to this particular game, which is the opportunity to be immortalized as a cartoon in the game. So we offered to anyone who donates over $250 that they can... I will basically draw them as a cartoon and use them in a cartoon example in the game. Like throughout the game, there's all these quiz questions because in order to get better at critical thinking, you need to practice over and over. One of the ways to motivate people to practice is I provide all these cartoon examples of logical fallacies, and you have to look at the cartoon and then identify which is the fallacy in it in the form of a quiz question. And so I have to draw all these cartoons over and over, like dozens and dozens of cartoons. So we thought, how about we offer people to get drawn into these cartoons as quiz questions, and that will A, help us fund the development of the game, but B, it also rewards everyone who helps support the game because then they get to be immortalized in the game.
Now, are there some of those spots left? Is it still possible for people, as of this recording on, what is it, Sunday, December 7th?
Oh, yeah, but this will come out Tuesday, December 10th, most likely.
So as of this recording, which is, is it the 7th or the 8th today?
Oh, it's the 8th.
Oh, the 8th. So right now, how many slots are left for the cartoon option?
I think there are about 70 slots left.
Okay.
So quite a few. There's plenty of opportunity.
Awesome.
And I've been getting in contact with, including yourself, people who have... donated to the game and asking for photos so that I can draw them, and getting some really interesting responses. One person sent me photos of their dog in the game, right? Kind of threw a curveball at me, because then I thought, well, I'm gonna have to come up with a dog themed fallacy rather than I think the dog is thinking this thought: cats have tails, I have a tail, therefore I must be a cat, as an example of a logical fallacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Very cool. It's fun to be part of something like this, both as a science educator, I'm a former science teacher, and as a podcaster who enjoys doing what we do.
Well, awesome. Well, John Cook, thank you so much for being on Breaking Math. We're very, very excited to see your app come out. And it's awesome what... what people are like finally stepping up to do about climate change.
Yes, it's exciting. It's very, very exciting. So we are very happy to support this, to be part of it, and to help promote your project and help our listeners find out how they can support it. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.